Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
I'm Matt.
And today we're talking short-term rental smackdown, negative Nellies, and donation dilemmas.
That's right. Happy Friday to everyone out there. I feel like folks are starting to get back into the swing of things. Kids are back in school. Fridays mean something now, whereas like over the summer, Fridays, they don't mean anything. It's just another day of the summer.
Is it called Fri-yay? Can we call it that?
Oh, you know, if you're speaking GIF. But yeah, this is our Friday Flights, and we're going to cover the top stories, the ones that we think you need to be paying a little more attention to because they pertain to your personal finances. We're going to get to the ones you mentioned, Joel, plus a bunch of others today.
Yeah, but good stuff for sure.
You want to talk about your watch?
If you listen closely, if you listen a lot, you heard me mention that I kind of wanted to get one of the Garmin smartwatches. Largely, it doesn't have a touchscreen, which I'm actually thrilled about. It's pretty smart.
I'll say I dig the way that looks, because it's all black, and yeah. I like the black on black on black. Like it's, well, you know, like the actual typography or the typeface. It's like a dark gray.
Yeah,
it looks. It's got a good. It reminds me of my bike, which is all. It's like all blacked out.
Yeah, kind of got a minimalist vibe for sure.
It's a good look.
Yeah, so I like it. And I got it used. I will say I mentioned that I was looking for a discounted one right on Prime Day or something like that, and I didn't see anything pop up that really made me want to pounce. And so I said, you know what? Why don't I look and see how much they go for used? And I looked on eBay, and I was like, I don't know, there's not enough of a discount to make me want to jump on it. But then, for some, I never really used this app, but I tried something called Mercari. Have you heard of that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's kind of like eBay, but...
For fancy people.
I guess, is what they're saying. Yeah. But I got this watch for $70, dude. And
how much is it normally?
I think it's like a $200 watch. It's
nice.
The regular, and so there are two generations. I got the first generation because I don't really care. I didn't see enough differences between the first and second. So,
first gen.
Yeah, so I got the first gen.
Right on.
$70 shipped to my door, and it's been great, man. And
so
like,
what's smart about it?
Okay.
Sure, like, because people hear smartwatch, it's not a touchscreen, so it sounds kind of dumb.
Yeah, exactly.
To a lot of people.
So, well, that's actually what I wanted, because I didn't want, like, and I turned off all the notifications from my phone, so people are like, well, then what does it really do? Well, it's just tracking my health statistics, right?
I didn't know it actually linked to your phone, too.
Yeah. So okay. I've got an app on the phone that I can check, and I can see, like, it can tell me how I slept, it can tell me how many steps I've taken, it can tell me what my heart rate has been, and high heart rate, and it can track all my different kind of workouts and
as
stuff like
Joel
that.
Joel enters middle age, he wants to start tracking the metrics.
Well, the cool thing is, I will say, part of what I like about it is it motivates me to do more on things that I want to be doing, but I kind of like to challenge myself, and so I'm having this app that's tracking all my stuff, and it's kind of
like
saying
from a running standpoint,
yeah, from like a running, okay. from like how many active minutes are you spending each and every week,
nice.
And this is tracking all that stuff, and it makes me want to like beat myself from the week before.
You want to increase your numbers. Yeah. Like, I know on the Apple Watch, I don't have one, but, like, you close your circles,
yes,
right? Like, yeah. Isn't that how that works?
That's exactly, yeah. Emily's got one, and that's how it works.
Well, okay, so I love you bring this up. I think it's great. I totally did something similar. So I used eBay, though, and I was kind of in the market for a blazer. I don't have, like, a blazer, uh-huh. like a sports coat. And I found one that I liked, and brand new, dude, this thing was $390.
Wow.
I'm like, that's a lot of stinking money. And so here's what's great, though, about getting something that you know you either want or even need is that if you've got time on your side, you can take the time to shop around and in particular see if you can get it used. Because So with that in mind, I'm like, I don't need blazer like now, today, next week, but maybe like in a couple months. And so I looked on eBay, and there was the exact one that I was thinking about buying. And it wasn't even used. This is what's so killer, too, is that there's so many folks on there, and they've got NWT, uh-huh. new with tags,
that's
baby.
Right.
I love seeing that, because this massive discount is all I know I'm getting.
It's screaming massive discount.
There's no wear and tear on this thing. They had it, so $390, this thing was listed for $125, and I also love...
You can make an offer.
Make an offer.
Yes.
And so I made an offer at $90. And they accepted it.
Boom.
You know, like, because these folks, they've got these items, like, I guess if you do this...
So that's like 80% off.
More full time, and you've got a bunch of inventory, you just want to unload it.
Yeah.
And of course, I instantly regretted, and I was like, oh, I should have offered even lower. But they got the recommendation on there now, too, where it's just like, they're more likely to accept it if you make an offer around $93.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, I'll try $90.
I did something similar.
But I love it. So the ability to have time on your side, man... Yeah, what, you said 80% discount? Like a massive discount.
Yeah.
I saved $300 on something that is like virtually brand new.
Yeah, these are like good shopping tips, hopefully,
yes.
from both of us. But,
well,
I think the other thing I just wanted to say...
It applies to all sorts of things, too, not just like consumer goods, but like when it comes to housing, the ability to shop around, and when you have time on your side, man, that's you come out ahead.
But it's helpful to know that there are multiple different sites. Like, I wasn't even really aware of Mercari. I guess I knew it existed, and I was like, well, I'll check that out. And so, I'm just, man, I really like the ways in which this watch is like influencing my behavior in a positive way. I'm not glued to the screen because it's not a touchscreen. It's not doing a whole lot besides telling me the time.
Super minimal. It kind of reminds me of e-ink. That's why I like it, because I love e-ink, like Kindle, reading on my Kindle. But the ability to have that on a watch,
kind of got that vibe.
Who knows, man? I might join you soon enough.
Yeah. So just letting people know, like, there are always ways. Like, you don't need the thing brand new necessarily, and you might not need the newest version. And the more you shop around, the more you might save. And if you don't need it, I like that tip, Matt. If you don't need it immediately, take some time, keep looking, and make an offer. Why not? Do all the above to save a little bit when you're buying something.
All right. Let's get to our Friday flights, the different stories we came across. And we're going to spend a minute here talking about Airbnb specifically because, short-term rentals. They're having a moment, and it's not a good moment for them. Some of the biggest cities in the U.S. are trying to tamp down. They're trying to create more rules surrounding listings that appear on sites like Airbnb. Wired, they called New York's crackdown the end of Airbnb in New York. New York City, the Big Apple, they already had some restrictions on the books, but now they're actually going to enforce them. They're going to, I guess I'm thinking of Asheville. Asheville has had a more stringent regulation surrounding the Airbnbs and how you have to be like registered with the city. But now the only way to run an Airbnb in the city is if you are staying in the apartment with the folks who are renting it. And that's for if it's a short-term rental for like less than 30 days or something like that. But given the fact that a lot of folks want an apartment to themselves, right? Like they don't want to... There's a lot of folks who aren't wanting to do the sleep on the couch thing or like it's a shared apartment, but you've got your own room. Kate and I, like when we were younger even, and when we were traveling on shoestring budgets, that was never a consideration. I guess it's when you have a partner, right? Yeah. When you have a significant other, because if it was me solo, I totally share a room. But when you've got somebody else with you, you want your privacy, like you're talking about stuff.
Emily,
I think this is going to have a serious impact on Airbnbs in New York.
Talking about stuff. Emily and I actually did that in Norway one time because the prices were so expensive, specifically in Bergen, Norway, where we said, oh my gosh, to stay in a house where there's somebody else there is going to save us so much money, it's worth the trade-off for this one night in this one place, right?
Yeah.
But most of the time, no, we want our own place.
Yeah. Actually, I guess I take that back. I think about we rented a place when we went to Ireland like 10, Was it 10 years ago? Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Well, it's like you remember traditional
B&B. That one place? Yeah. Okay.
So then the people who run it are actually living there.
They're there. We're like playing with her kid.
Yeah. No. So you can, part of it depends on your mentality. It can be kind of quaint and nostalgic.
It's what you're there for.
Or it can be creepy if it's like a really small New York City apartment.
And my mind immediately went to the creepy.
You're literally all brushing your teeth at the same time, which is weird. But it's not just New York City, Matt. The short-term crackdown isn't just happening there. The LA Times wrote this week about Airbnbs being listed that haven't applied for an application with the city to list their property. So basically, they're in violation of local laws there. And so these laws in Los Angeles are pretty stringent for short-term rentals too. And a good number of folks are trying to skirt the rules to keep their rental business afloat. They're not filing. They're just going ahead and listing their Airbnb on the site because
they've got that illegal Airbnb going on.
They don't want to jump through the hoops that it takes to get there and pay the city for the privilege of listing on the site. And so there are a few takeaways, I would say, from what's happening in this space right now. One, short-term rentals can be lucrative. There are some people who are like really making money substantially, like they're supporting their lifestyle based on short-term rentals. Two, that could change overnight thanks to new government restrictions. Mm-hmm. Makes me think, I have a buddy who has an Airbnb in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and his does quite well. He thought about buying another one. But guess what? The city of Chattanooga said, we're putting a moratorium on any new short-term rentals for the time being. And your grandfather in if you have one, but if you're like trying to launch one, sorry, you're out of luck. You can't do it now. And so basically, I think if you live in a place where short-term rentals are allowed and you can make a sweet income stream, then it's great. It can be a great way to get into real estate, but have a backup plan, right? Hope for the best, but at least have a plan in place for the worst potential outcome, because we're seeing people going through the worst potential outcome in certain places where, you know, the laws are being either finally enforced or being written to curb the amount of short-term rentals that are available.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it pays to pay attention to some of the different industries that you're thinking about getting into where there's a lot of government involvement, where things could change either from a platform, right? Like from a private company, like even Airbnb could say, I don't know why they would do this, but they could say, all right, no more new Airbnb. Like we're kind of capped out. We're just going to keep things where they are, whether it's being beholden to a specific platform. It's why we warn against that when it comes to even like with gig work. But then specifically when it comes to different of the like different government agencies or just regulations that might come into play, like it makes me think of the marijuana industry, right? Like weed. And if you're going all in on that, okay, like you might see some outsized returns, but you are also exposing yourself to outsized risk because you just don't know where policy is going to go and what the rules are going to be.
In that industry, you might find that banks don't want to do business with you, right?
But you never know.
Growing operations, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so one of the reasons for the Airbnb crackdowns, though, is because of the price of housing, because of the increases that we've seen in rent. But the truth is, short-term rentals aren't the problem. That's just a result of the market.
They're easy to pick on. It's easy to make it feel like, hey, these are the guys.
If it wasn't for Airbnb, it's not Airbnb. It's the fact that, well, the market says that it's worth more if I can rent this out short term as opposed to a long term renter. Zoning laws, we think that they are more the culprit. When they don't allow for building more units, when they are preventing greater density, those are the real culprit, in our opinion. There was a great article in Insider about New Zealand's approach to zoning. They were basically facing a housing cost crisis, and they responded by relaxing medium density zoning restrictions, and which obviously made it much easier to build duplexes and triplexes on what were originally single family lots.
Yeah.
And the result was
they're not like putting up high rises in single family neighborhoods.
It's still reasonable. Yeah. We're not like getting rid of all the rules, but more supply came on the market because of this. Builders, they were able to meet that need, that demand. More supply really does help the pricing problem. And the evidence points to the fact that rent and pricing growth slows down. So, you know, doesn't necessarily decrease, but it doesn't continue to skyrocket when more units are being built, when there is more supply.
And I guess theoretically it would decrease if enough units were built.
Right? Yeah. There's a chance it could reverse course.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And we're not necessarily Airbnb homers, although we think they're an interesting company that's really made hospitality across the United States. It's changed the face of it. But really, let's find the right problem and pinpoint that and attack that. And zoning, not enough supply. Those are the real problems that have led to the housing cost increases that we've seen in all varieties. And so, but you still need to be aware, if you're a wannabe short-term real estate investor, of kind of these new laws. It's in vogue right now to kind of tamp down on this stuff. But Matt, let's get to our next story. This one is about the negative Nellies out there. They're continuing to do their thing, as they always do. Negative Nellies like to be negative. And so Kevin O'Leary of Shark Tank fame, he was recently on a show and he started predicting, he's basically predicting chaos for the U.S. economy in the coming days, in the coming months. He's particularly worried, he says, about small businesses, and he says that we have a crisis emerging because of Federal Reserve interest rate hikes. And it may, I don't know, it just felt kind of like a Chicken Little sort of thing, the sky is falling, hearing this from him. But Matt, from everything you and I read and see, from almost every metric that we can track, inflation is coming down, unemployment is low, consumer spending is solid, and businesses have been able to raise prices when they need to because consumers still have money to spend. It seems like by every metric, the economy is doing quite well. And like, could we enter a recession in the next 12 to 18 months? Sure. Yes, it's of course possible, especially since a recession happens on average every like 5 to 6 years in the United States. But I guess I'm just so tired of these guys getting the headlines that spook normal people, that cause people to be like, oh my gosh, is it really? Is it all coming down? Like, is it a house of cards, this U.S. economy or something like that? Should I move into cash or better yet, Bitcoin? Because, man.
Or gold. I feel like those are the kind of headlines that push people towards precious metals.
Well, Bitcoin's the new digital gold, so that's where people are going. But, like, I just get frustrated. I get annoyed when I see people in positions like this. People, and I don't know who, but I think there's a lot of people out there who trust guys like Kevin O'Leary. And they believe that he is telling them the truth and what's in their best interest. I just don't. Well, that's the case in this scenario.
Well, yeah. And part of it might also be media as well, because I'm sure were you to actually talk to him, he would give maybe a slightly more nuanced version of that headline. But media companies...
That's not what he's known for, nuance, by the way. So.
Well, he is looking out for smaller businesses.
He's a straight talker, you know?
Which I appreciate. But like, there's a lot of help that's certainly being given to a lot of the giant businesses out there. And he's specifically talking about how it seems like smaller businesses might be the ones getting crushed here in the future. Yeah. But regardless, though, of who it is we're talking about or the advice that they're given, we think that the lesson here is to be careful who it is that you're listening to. Like, it makes me think of Robert Kiyosaki, the rich dad, poor dad guy. He has some decent personal finance advice, but he is even worse than Kevin O'Leary. Like, he is constantly calling for the end of the U.S. economy.
Like, multiple times a year on Twitter, he sounds the death knell.
Yes.
And people are like,
except in his case,
here we go again.
Like, that's literally what he's saying, and that's what he's known for. As opposed, like, I feel like maybe his, yeah, the more Rich Dad Poor Dad talks, the more I'm like, dude, I don't know. I might be getting tired.
I'm out, bro.
Tired of your message altogether. But bottom line, what I think the big thing that I kind of hate that we're talking about this because we don't want to bring any more light and attention to this. But it's also important to cover this because we want to disarm any of these headlines. We want to put you at ease because if specifically COVID, if the aftermath, if our economy's ability to rebound has proven anything, it's that our country is resilient as all get out. Bad things are certainly going to happen. Yes, we might see a recession. Who knows exactly when that's going to happen, but not everything is going to be perfectly peachy, but we're still living in one of the greatest countries at an incredible time in human history. You can certainly read those stories as much as you want. Try not to let them sway how it is that you are handling and spending and investing your money, though.
Yeah. And you know what? Negative people are going to be negative. And there's a whole... I think it sounds smarter for some reason to say things are going to hell in a handbasket or things are awful because it's easier for humans to identify negative things in the world around us than it is to identify positives. I think that's a natural human tendency and bias, like to see the perceived threats around us and to be aware. And there are always perceived threats to the economy. But the truth is also that the economy's done really well, like you said, in the aftermath of COVID.
Yeah.
And so to me,
it might be less about the negative versus the positive as opposed to the certainty. Because I think when folks come in and they're saying like a certain, by this quarter, or the certainty in which they proclaim things is, I think, what a lot of people latch on to, because people don't like uncertainty.
Yeah.
I think more than anything else, they can handle things going poorly or things going well for them. But it's the uncertainty that puts people in that weird state of limbo where they're not totally sure what to expect next.
Yeah, and I think some of the guys like Kevin O'Leary and Robert Kiyosaki, who speak with a ton of boldness.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like, I know what's going to happen, and here, let me lay it out for you. That,
and they say it with such confidence.
I know, yeah. That's, I guess that's where the term con man comes
there
from,
you
right?
Go.
So, all right, let's move on, though. Let's talk about healthcare. Maybe I'll be, I'm going to be a Debbie Downer here for a second, but with facts, not with bogus predictions. It's no secret that health insurance has become more expensive, and a couple of major benefits consulting firms say that prices are going to rise 6.5% in 2024 in the healthcare sector, which obviously sucks, right? But it's a good thing to be aware of, because it's important to know that more of your paycheck might soon be going towards increased health insurance premiums, increased health insurance costs. And if you have health insurance through your employer, they might absorb some of that hit. But they also might not. And so, and even if they do, by the way, that can mean more meager salary increases, because instead of giving you a 6% raise, it's a 4% raise, because more of what would have gone to your paycheck is going to pay for those increased healthcare expenses that the employer is participating in with you.
Yeah. Okay. So a quick explainer as to why this is happening. Basically, it's like a delayed reaction of the inflation that we've seen over the past couple of years. I thought they did a good job explaining it in this article, and we'll link to this story like we do all the stories that we mentioned during the Friday flight. But they were essentially talking, like, insurers and hospitals, they've got contracts, but those contracts don't come up for renewal every single year. And so the higher costs that the hospitals incurred, like staffing shortages, right? Mm-hmm. Like, think about all the money that nurses were getting paid. Those contracts are coming up for renewal. And so those costs are basically being reflected in the contracts that the insurers are able to negotiate with the hospitals, which are now beginning to renew, and those costs are now then being passed along to consumers, mm-hmm. right? So it's like a domino effect, essentially.
Delayed impact.
Exactly, exactly. And so it's something that I think we can expect to see across the board. But one of the things you can do is, as we are getting closer to open enrollment, consider raising, going with a plan that has a higher deductible. If you're younger, if you have a healthy family, if you rarely go and see the doctor, consider a high deductible healthcare plan, one that also, by the way, gets you access to an HSA, yeah. added investing benefit there.
Double whammy.
You're self-insuring by paying fewer premiums every single month, but instead, be disciplined, take that money, stick it in your own high-yield savings account. That way, you've got the money on hand to actually meet that deductible if and when you do need to visit the doctor.
No, I think that's good advice. I think a lot of people, Matt, they just assume, well, I want the top-tier coverage, but you might not need the top tier coverage. You might be paying a whole lot extra for it. And so getting the higher deductible plan, really, you can still go see the same doctors. It just means that you're self-insuring more. You got to have a little bit more money mm-hmm. in the bank to cover some of those healthcare costs, the healthcare expenses that you're hoping don't come to pass.
Totally. Yeah. And you could also consider a health sharing plan. Like Joel, like both of our families
That's
are
right.
on a health sharing plan. Traditionally, they have like a religious component, but there are multiple companies now that do not have a faith element at all. Like Sedera is a newer one mm-hmm. that a lot of folks are checking out, but technically it is not actually insurance. It's not regulated, but if that's a way that you are interested in perhaps saving some money, we'll link to an article in the show notes about MediShare specifically, and we can link to some of the other ones as well. But Joel, we've got additional stories that we're going to get to, including whether or not we're on the path to becoming a cashless society. We'll get to that, plus others, right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus 5-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right, in just a second, we're going to talk about digital payments. Matt, I can't wait to pay with the chip that's embedded in my wrist.
Yeah, that's a real thing, you know.
I know.
Have you seen that?
You wave it over the payment? Yeah, it's freaky.
What is it? World Market? No, not World Market. What's it called? Whole Foods.
World Market?
Oh, that's like a furniture store.
Yeah.
Forget that.
They don't do that there. But first, we got to get to the ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from the New York Times, and it reads, a $700 million bonanza for the winners of crypto's collapse. Lawyers. Yes. At least someone is getting rich off cryptocurrency, I guess, Matt. That was my initial thought. My initial takeaway from reading that was like, yeah, most people got screwed, but I guess somebody is making out like a bandit. But the reality is, while millions of Americans have lost hundreds or thousands of dollars in dribs and drabs by socking money into different cryptocurrency investments, the folks making the real money are the legal class. It's lawyers, it's accountants and consultants. Those are the folks who have raked in massive amounts of money from firms like FTX, right? At the same time, though, the regular folks lost it all. And so some of these lawyers, Matt, they command thousands of dollars an hour in fees, which, you know, they probably went to prestigious schools. They've worked really hard to make a great income. I'm not hating on their ability to make money, but it kind of feels like a poke in the eye to normal folks who lost some of their savings, right? Thanks to SBF and his Ponzi scheme and some of these other crypto firms that went bust, where lawyers are coming in, they're leeching off, they're taking so much of the money that that would otherwise go to some of the folks who did lose a bunch of their savings.
Yeah, and of course, the way that you could not be footing the bills for these expensive law firms is by having avoided cryptocurrencies altogether, but there's one law firm there that was working for Celsius, another failed one, where they billed $100,000 to come up with, like, they were trying to determine whether or not they're going to bring up a case to potentially pursue a Celsius customer using creditor funds to go after that creditor, basically. So they're using essentially her own money to decide whether or not they're going to sue her or not. And honestly, just crypto in general, it's a mess. But on that note, Bloomberg had an article about the downfall of NFTs. Don't know if you remember those, Joel. Non-fungible tokens.
The old expensive JPEGs, right?
Exactly. And it's not the JPEG that you own. What you own is the fact that you bought the JPEG. Yes. Basically, you own the receipt.
It's the certificate of authenticity that accompanies the JPEG that makes it worth $250,000.
Everyone's heard of autopsies, right? And they exist for a reason, and that's to figure out the cause of death. Well, basically, that's where we are when it comes to NFTs. The hype of non-fungible tokens has faded, and so have any of the quote-unquote investments that folks have made within the space. That FOMO was in full gear, and it turned out that January of 2022 was the top, of course. And so those who were speculating in the NFT space, they got hosed. And that includes not just normal folks, but like billionaires out there as well who launched NFT platforms and projects, celebrities out there. It's not often that we see hype and we see the mania get to the degree that NFTs reached, but I think it's certainly, again, a good reminder that boring is better. Stick yeah. with tried and true investments, and you can avoid getting burned altogether when it comes to your Bored Ape plunging in value, or if you even just hate the fact that more of your investment dollars, the lawsuit and the potential payout that you might receive as a customer of somebody like Celsius or FTX is going to pay the bills of expensive attorneys.
Yeah, and typically we read about manias and bubbles in textbooks, and so it's just really interesting to have kind of lived through one and to have seen the rise and the fall, the swell and then the bust yeah. of that space. And it's funny because I haven't even really heard the term NFT recently. Nobody cares anymore, and yet it was like the hot new thing on the block there for a minute. And so people have to be careful. We're going to see another one at some point, a hot new thing on the block, and yeah,
it'll just be something different.
Yeah
it's not the fact that NFTs are no longer cool. It's the fact that that they carry any cachet or anything. It's the fact that there will be something else that carries that same weight.
Yes.
And we're just preemptively putting that on your radar. Just store that one away, because
it should cause your hackles to come up. It should raise your antennas, being like, wait a second, this feels like something in the past that I experienced. And I can't predict or tell you what it's going to be, but something else will come along that's similar, even though it's gonna like look different in name and in style, but it's going to have a lot of the same underlying elements.
It might smell the same.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right, let's talk about cash for a second. Like the actual physical cash that it turns out fewer folks are even using. According to Pew Research, 40% of Americans actually didn't use any cash last year, which is a shockingly high number. It's more than I was expecting.
Yeah. Like literally almost half the country.
Because I used cash last year. I just did it really, really sparingly, right? Very infrequently. And digital wallets, Apple Pay, Google Pay, they've become more commonplace. And apps like Venmo, Cash App for, you know, splitting checks and stuff like that. And it used to be, I think, just the younger generation partaking in some of those things. But now it feels like, Gen X, baby boomers, they've gotten all in on it too.
Literally this past weekend, my mother-in-law was like, hey, help me out with Venmo.
Yeah.
And I literally set her up on Venmo because she buys stuff used. That's how you do it.
That's right.
Off of like Facebook. And she's like, everyone's asking for Venmo. I got to get on this.
That's
Venmo
how people
game.
Want to take payment. Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. And then actual retailers and restaurants, they've been moving in that direction as well. Taco Bell has said that they want to go completely cashless at all of their restaurants. And so it's interesting to see. And I think in many ways, the transition to digital makes a whole lot of sense, right? But I think also while I get businesses wanting to streamline things, not accepting physical US dollars seems kind of silly too. Like you're limiting your customers, especially a place like Taco Bell. Like, I guess I'm old school and I just think people should still have the ability to use cash if that's their preference.
I think they'll still have the ability, but just, okay, so like one of the biggest downsides, I think, to there being less cash or us even potentially moving more in that direction is when it comes to teaching kids about money.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about this, right? Maybe it's been a while actually, so maybe folks probably don't even remember, or I don't know, maybe. Yeah, you forgot or something. But like
they hang on your every word, man.
For a while there, we went totally digital and we're paying our kids for the different jobs they're doing via a digital app. Like even the interest they were earning by quote unquote investing it, I was paying it that way. But I don't think it was very successful. It kind of fell flat. This also makes me, have you heard of Singapore math? You've heard of it, right? It's no. it's a curriculum. It's just a way of teaching math.
Okay.
But the core, like the tenets of it are, when you are teaching kids math, like it can be a difficult theoretical thing to understand and grasp. And so what you do, you start with concrete ways of teaching kids, so like literal blocks on their desk, and you count them and you subtract them and you add them together. You move from that to the pictures. So basically a visual representation of that on paper. And then from there, you're able to move more to the abstract and kids are able to understand the concepts.
It's like building blocks.
And to fully understand what it is that they're doing. Yeah, you take these baby steps and you incrementally have a better understanding of what it is. I do wonder if kids in particular are never taught about money in the tangible, like where they're actually holding it and that they hand it over when they pay for something, that they're truly missing out potentially on what it is that money can actually do or the true value of money. And so hopefully there will always at least be a little bit of money on hand, at least for us to teach our kids.
Yeah.
And of course that kind of comes down to us as parents.
Well,
as well.
Some people want to use cash for privacy reasons, which I totally get to.
Yep.
So
yep,
it's like,
totally get it.
I don't want not even just the government, but like Visa and MasterCard knowing everything I do.
That's right. Okay. But so all signs do point though to the fact that we are moving towards like a cashless society, whether you like it or not. And so I think that it comes down to us, again, as individuals, to then determine how best, for instance, to monitor our spending, right? Because you may not like the fact that the rules of the game are changing, but how can you best adapt to those changing rules? And so before, when you're talking about physical cash, like you were like literally physically limited on how much you could spend because you ran out of cash. I'm sure there's still folks who do the envelope system. But using technology to then place digital constraints on your spending, I think those are the next steps. And I think it would be prudent and wise to start finding ways to harness this technology to control and to govern yourself, right? To provide that discipline. And so I think what that means is at the very least, just monitoring your spending via a free app like Mint. We talk about that all the time. Or even considering paying for a service like YNAB, where it's got a little, it's more sophisticated with the ability for you to plan out your spending and when it comes to budgeting. But don't totally stick your head in the sand and say, well, even though things are going more digital, I'm not necessarily going to change my ways when it comes to the best practices for me to be able to optimize my money. No, like, just move along with the time. I'm looking at your watch. It makes me think about your watch. Like, maybe before, somebody would have a running partner or like sign up for a race or something like that. And those are great. Certainly accountability, and it's fun to run a race or whatever. But like, there's also other ways where you can take advantage of technology and charts and seeing your numbers. I think the ability to make the best of technology is the best path forward.
Yeah,
personally.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point, though, is using the best of technology, because there's sometimes technology
not letting it use you.
Yeah, it
right?
can trap us, right? And we can be the bill of goods that's being sold, as opposed to using technology in a way that helps us without allowing it to harm us. And so I think you're right, like digital minimalism, right? That concept of using enough technology to get things you need to get done or you want to get done, and then being able to put it aside. And so I think something like YNAB is a perfect use case of like good technology that helps us, and something like this watch too, where it's not distracting me, but it's giving me what I need.
Love it.
All right, let's get to talk about charity, Matt, for a second. Because speaking of like digital payments when we're out shopping or something like that, if you were to ask a poll our listener base, I would imagine most people have gotten asked to donate money at some point while they've been checking out, right? While they've been at the checkout.
You're not just talking about tip. You're not talking about donating money to the person who just made your coffee.
No, which you should do. You should tip the person, right, who's serving you. But you're literally asked to donate to a nonprofit, to a cause that the grocery store or retailer supports. It feels like it's happening all the time now. And this new study finds that we're being asked to make charitable contributions at the point of purchase more than ever. So it's not just like in our minds, like it's really happening. And the thing is, people are participating. Shopper donations at checkout have gone up something like 24% since 2020. But people are apparently getting tired of being asked. I know I am. It's understandable, right? Not everyone feels like this, but I would say a decent chunk of folks feel kind of browbeaten into rounding up the purchase price or into donating $5 or $10 for that retailer's pet cause. My take, and not everyone has to agree with me, but my take is to always say no. Not because you hate the cause or because you don't care about others or because you're not planning to be generous. But I would say people should rather proactively choose where they want their money to go instead of being guilt-tripped into that donation in a spur-of-the-moment transaction. It allows you to have more control over where your money goes. You can be more generous even, in fact, by saying no. But by funneling your dollars into the nonprofits that you care about. It's just interesting to see that we're being like asked for donations more and more and more. And I think a lot of times people just feel like, I feel like it's the right thing to do, so I'm going to do it, even if their heart's not in it, let's say.
They're guilt-tripped into doing it.
Yeah.
So I like what you're saying, but I would say the only caveat is that I would say continue to give, maybe, because like maybe you aren't giving at all. And I would say use that desire to not necessarily give to these organizations that you're the most crazy about as fuel for the fire for you to find the charities that you do care about. Because I think the temptation, like the reason these prompts exist is because people don't give. There's just a lack of an ability for us to be proactive and to go out there.
I don't think it's because people don't give. I think Americans actually, when you look at the numbers, we're actually really generous, more generous than most cultures.
I guess I'm thinking about the fact that I think there's a lot of folks who might hear what you're saying and take that as permission to be like, yeah, I'm not going to give anymore. But then they don't go out there and actually do the research.
Yeah.
And
that's not what I said.
I totally, it's definitely not what you said. But I'm just pointing out the behavioral tendency to not necessarily want to give our money away, because marketing works, right? Like, that's why these different efforts are out there, is because if you're able to get in front of somebody and to remind them, you're like, okay, yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. But if you're relying on yourself to do it at a later time, you just have to make sure that you actually do that, you know?
And I just think that when you're asked to donate $5 at checkout, the lazy person's way out is to be like, okay, and then wait, look, I've done my good thing.
Sure.
But the truth is, you don't know. I'm not even saying that the money that they're asking for isn't going to those nonprofits. It is. Like, everything I've read, it sounds like the money is going to those nonprofits that they say it's going to. So it's not like I'm even worried about fraud or anything like that. It's just that, man, what nonprofit do you want to see succeed?
Exactly. It may not be your first choice, though.
Yeah. And even still, is that nonprofit that you're giving money to, how well are they using the funds? Those are things you can look up and see, so that you can proactively funnel money towards nonprofits you care about that are being really effective.
Exactly. And we truly do feel that it's important to give your money. And so we want people to be proactive and to take these steps to do this. It's just that I get the argument of marketers, because they're like, well, nobody wants to, who truly wants to give their money away? We recommend for you to do this, for folks out there to do this all the time. And specifically, you can research some of the different organizations at a site like give.org or Charity Navigator. They both do a great job at giving you just a peek behind the curtain. But do some research and then send a one-time gift, or just make a recurring monthly donation, as opposed to, again, feeling kind of guilt-tripped into being like, all right, I'll go ahead and do the $5. You could even start a donor-advised fund to invest money for future giving purposes, too, if you're not quite sure where it is that you want to funnel those giving dollars now. But again, it comes down to whether or not you're actually going to do that thing. But hopefully, you are hearing us talk about this. This is the kind of the kick in the pants for you to say, all right, let me actually do that. How much am I actually giving away of my money? Because it feels like I'm giving away a bunch because I'm prompted often. But as a percentage of your income, maybe it's like, I don't know, like 0.05% of your actual income. And you're probably thinking, but that feels more like 5% of my actual income. But it's because it's not something that you're proactively looking at. And we want folks to be more engaged with the money that they're giving away.
Yeah, we'd rather see you feel connected to the giving that you're doing, as opposed to some sort of disconnected in the moment guilt trip. Like, that doesn't make you feel good about the giving that you're doing either, right? It's kind of crummy. It's not ideal. So instead, if you're the one who's proactively looking for and saying, you know what I care about? I care about the local shelter that's rescuing animals in my area. Like, that's something I can feel connected to. And proactively giving your money in that direction, go for it. That's great.
Love it.
But just because somebody's raising money and they put it in front of your face, it doesn't mean that's the thing you should give money to. That,
exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, is that going to be it?
That's it.
All right. That's it for our Friday flight. You can find resources, some of the different things we mentioned during this episode, up in our show notes, up on the website at howtomoney.com. And we hope everyone out there has a beautiful weekend. So, buddy, that's going to be it. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.